Hello and welcome to the Meclis, a Central Asia podcast at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I'm Mohammed Tahir, director of the Turkmen service at Radio Free Europe. In recent months, three developments are taking place side by side involving Turkmenistan. They are increasing instability in the Afghan side of the border, financial constraints, and an unprecedented wave of dismissal of top officials. So far in 2016, tens of officials, including ministers and their deputies, regional and district mayors are fired. Many more are reprimanded by the president in a televised meetings with a vague accusation of shortcoming, but things are not getting better. No doubt, these are confusing, unpredictable in tough days in Turkmenistan. In this episode of Meclis, Central Asia podcast at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, we try to connect the dots to understand what is really happening in the country. What are the connections between those dots? What is the logic behind it? And most importantly, where it is leading Turkmenistan. To discuss the subject, I have Dr. Lukan Cesci, chairperson of the Central Asian Studies Center at the University of Glasgow. Dr. Luka, welcome to the Meclis.
Hello, Mohammed.
Very nice to have you, Dr. Luka. Ruslan Matiyev, director of Turkmenistan Alternative News, is joining us. Ruslan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Thank you for being part of the Meclis today. Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlak Awazi, Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, is also joining me here in the studio. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bruce. Ruslan, first of all, take us through some of the biggest dismissals of the recent months in Turkmenistan.
I have been following these dismissals, and it's, as you said in the intro, it's very logical and very expected move of President Berdimuhamedov, given the financial state of the country and many, many other factors.
Among the people who were fired recently were ministers, that includes finance, security. Do you recall some of the names?
It's hard to answer. No, I don't actually recall very many names. In fact, not any of them, because it's not... Well, under Niyazov, it was a practice when newly appointed officials would have their bios published in the local press or in the national press. I don't think that is happening anymore, especially when it comes to, for instance, deputies of governors in certain districts or certain regions. Perhaps it is the case for the governors, but very few people know who their governors are, who their deputies are, sure. What their duties are, and things like that.
Right. Bruce, we have been writing and thinking and talking about these dismissals over the last several months, and we did, I believe, put out some piece on earlier on the reshuffles in the financial and security ministries.
If you go back to the start, to around February, yeah. I think that's when the really big guys started to fall, and we had, you know, Pavan Taganov, who was the head of the presidential apparatus, he was sacked. And about the same time, they also got rid of the deputy minister of trade and foreign relations, Rasul Murat Meredov. He was fired. Minister of Trade and Foreign Relations, Bayar Abayev, was fired in April.
Yeah.
And then the security chief, Gildi Hojaberdiev, who Ruslan pointed out was probably going to be fired soon, was actually, he wasn't technically fired. I think he asked to be dismissed. But at the same time he asked to be dismissed, they also, we had the dismissal of the Border Guard Service chief and Deputy Interior Minister and the chairman of the State Migration Service were reprimanded. And there's been a bunch of officials like that. And that's just some of the big guys, you know, as Ruslan pointed out, these and you pointed out in the intro too, a lot of the lower, still high level officials, but lower level than that, governors, district heads, people like that have been dismissed this year too. So the number, I lost count of it, but it's certainly dozens at this point.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Luka, you are at the stage of writing something bigger, academic, on these dismissals. How does it relate to the reality on the ground of these dismissals? Like Bruce just mentioned, people from the financial sector and security industry. Was there anything leading to that in those ministries?
My sense, because we can only talk of sense, we are actually exploring a context where there is not much information, because Ruslan is right. We no longer have the bio notes on these people, so we actually don't know who they are. And the fact that, you know, we can't even remember their names, in most cases, show that the politics of Turkmenistan is really personalized. We only know Berdimuhamedov, Meredov, and a couple more. But there isn't the sort of visibility in Kazakh, which is done by stability. So my sense is that what we're seeing here, it's more of an elite instability, that the repercussion of elite level of problems happened beyond the palace in the real world. So I think that we are seeing a process to which Berdimuhamedov is starting to treating its supporting elite the same way in which Niyazov did toward the end of his tenure, because the signals are pretty much the same. Berdimuhamedov is more and more often telling people what they should do in televised cabinet of ministers. Is going to the region and sacking 7-8 archims at the same time. It's sacking ministers in the whole sector at the same time. Mm. And the only way in which we can actually make sense of this development is by yet identifying each of these instances, being a ministerial, a regional, and cabinet level, as a crisis in the regime. He's pretty much trying to narrow down the elite and making himself at the center of patronage network, which are narrower and narrower.
Right. Bruce, as Dr. Loka mentioned, this dismissals includes every sector, financial, security, and regional governors, mayors, district-level mayors. So what does this say to you? I mean, it's confusing, obviously, why he's doing that, but is there any region that Berdimuhamedov is more focused, or is there any sector that he's more focused than the other?
You know, so far it doesn't seem to be that he's looking at one or two particular regions. I mean, this seems to be going on pretty much across the board. You know, I mean, I would agree with Luca that, you know, a lot of this is there's a lot of reshuffling of the elite, and there's a smaller pie now to divide up, and they're trying to figure out who's going to take the pieces of it at the moment. But on the other hand, I think a lot of these people are being at different levels. You know, as you pointed out, the economy is having a real hard time right now.
Right.
Somebody has to take the blame for this. Now, we know that in a lot of cases, these officials are being asked to do the impossible. They don't have the funding. They don't have the right tools to be able to make improvements in the society anymore. But that's not good for yeah. Turkmenistan. They need that news. The government needs the news that things are going forward all the time. And it's impossible in some of these cases. And I think these people are sacrificial lambs, ultimately, in some cases, where because they can't show any improvement because it is impossible to get any improvement, they're simply dismissed. You know, I suppose on some level it probably works to put fear into all the other officials to do everything in their power to fulfill orders from Berdimuhamedov, make changes and things like that. But ultimately, I think you're just stripping away the more competent officials and putting less competent people into place, and it's going to be this horrible cycle where it's just going to spiral downward.
Ruslan, it's not only dismissal. Lots of people have been also reprimanded in recent days. Are those people really doing a bad job? Do they lack competence? Or I know many of those people were handpicked by Berdimuhamedov not long ago. You know, it's just raises question.
Well, if he reprimands people that he handpicked himself, then it means that there are serious issues going on in the country. I do think that they lack competence because for 30 years, Turkmenistan did not manage to prepare young professionals who, for instance, received Western education. In fact, on the contrary, the government has been trying to limit the number of people traveling overseas, studying overseas. The issue with 150 students that went to American University in Central Asia is a bright example of it. So I do believe that they lack competence, but I think it's a more deeper and more structural problem that Berdimuhamedov is faced with now, because for the past 30 years, that was the way it worked, basically. It was a one-man rule, and it still is. So him appointing people even to the level as low as deputies of district governors in regions is a clear sign, a clear indication of big failures in the human resource management, in the human resource policies of Turkmenistan.
You said, Ruslan, deeper structural issues. What do you mean by that?
Well, the fact that basically appointment of any state officials is carried out by him. he selects these people, and God knows what his criteria for these are, whether it's tribal things, whether it's personal devotion, whether it's anything else. Basically, for the past 30 years, it has been the case. Anything but education, anything but competence was deciding in human resource management.
Right. Dr. Luca, Ruslan was talking about the competence and the possibility of a deeper structural issue in the country. Is it the only competence at play here, or is something else is going on behind all these reshuffles?
I think that we should really look at what makes your position in government and regional administration stable in Turkmenistan. I don't think that you are staying in your ministerial position or your governmental position if you are capable. I think that you're staying only if the president wants you to stay. So now stability and durability of jobs is the reward of your loyalty to the president. Or it's just an accidental issue that has to do with, as Bruce was saying before, Bedi Muhammadov have it to show to people that is doing something to address the problem. So in that sense, sacking people, sacking officials here and there. Interesting point, I think, has to do with the fact that we see now exactly the same thing that we've seen in the last 4 or 5 years of Niyazov's time. So in that sense, there is this cyclicity of Turkmenistan authoritarianism. The current regime is behaving exactly the same way in which the prior regime is. And stability in power is the result of rewards and no longer of policy responsibility of capabilities. So in that sense, Bekti Muhammadov got to the point in which his grip on power is so stable that he can do exactly the same things that Niyazov was doing. This is obviously not a good thing, because we've seen where the country went, where the situation, when Niyazov left. But it shows to me that 10 years down the track since election, Bekti Muhammadov is employing exactly the same power technologies that Niyazov did. And elite management is one of those.
Bruce, obviously, we are trying to catch fish in a blurred water. Is it what you say in English, right?
I understand, yeah. we don't say that exactly, but yes, I understand your point.
The thing is, it's very confusing. In the face of lots of the dismissals, reprimands and everything, the one guy survives, and that's the Ashgabat Mir. I think he was reprimanded twice, I believe, and he still survived in these two. How is that possible?
Yeah, I was kind of wondering how he pulled that off too, and hopefully Ruslan would know a little bit more about that. But I know he was reprimanded at the start of the year for shortcomings in modernization and rehabilitation of the capital, and then he was just reprimanded again last month because I think they're behind schedule in constructing the sports facilities and housing for these games they're going to hold next year. To the best of my recollection, that's the first time I ever remember a Turkmen official being reprimanded twice. You usually only get one warning at this. And in fact, when you get the first warning, it means that you're already on your way out. So I'm not really sure what kind of connection this individual has to President Berdi Mukhamedov or someone in the inner circle. But it is interesting that he seems to be somebody that they're not anxious to get rid of anytime soon for whatever reason. Like I said, two reprimands is unprecedented in Turkmen history.
Ruslan, this guy is still at the office.
I don't think it's very unusual for Turkmen officials being reprimanded twice or even more times. And Maysa Yazmuhamedova is a good example for it. I think she was reprimanded at least 3 times for shortcomings and other things.
And then she was gone, right?
Eventually, yes, but only after 3 or 4 reprimands. I need to look it up, but I'm sure it was more than twice. Regarding the mayor of Ashgabat, he might be a strong man, a bit higher on this level of power in Turkmenistan than any other governor. But the fact that he is still in his position, I really attribute to the fact that it was under him when all of this construction related to the Asian Games has started. And so basically he was the final responsible for these projects, for these grants, for these contracts. And getting rid of him right now would potentially delay the construction of the entire infrastructure for the Asian Games. So that could be one of the reasons. But I don't think that he's a very strong man, very strong official in the sense that, you know, he could be higher on the level of power.
Mm. Then there's another man who survives all reshuffles. That is Foreign Minister Rashid Miradov. How does that happen?
That, for me, it's the most puzzling situation of all of it, because in the niyaz of time, the foreign minister was replaced very often. And, you know, and a couple of them, including Sheikh Muradov, are still incommunicable. So they defected. So it was the most visible, if you want, governmental post. And then we got Meredov, who survives there for, I think, 15 years now. I think he's been there since 2001, if I'm not wrong. So, yeah, because he did substitute, he did replace Shira Muradov when he got sent to China as the ambassador. I find it very interesting. I think that he must have some power base that allows it to be on stay in power, although it's no longer as visible as it is. I think that when it comes to the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Vepa Hajiev has become more visible because he's more Western educated, he's more, if you want, cosmopolitan. So Meredov only does some of the most visible, you know, ceremonial things, like he would speak, you know, when Vepa Hajiev doesn't go to the UN, he was speaking instead. But Hajiev is those who drive foreign policy and neutrality more regularly. One thing about Meredov, I think, is that he never tried to be more prominent than his leader. He always been nicely placed behind the scene. He never harbored any ambition. And I think that's what really left him there. I mean, in comparison to, I mean, for instance, Sheikh Muradov, who was one of the most visible officials ever. But that's something which has really changed because he is the only guy who probably survived in the odds of elite and is still in power, or one of the very few.
Mm-hmm. Ruslan, you have various interactions outside the country in the meetings which are attended by the Turkmen delegations and where usually Hajiev represents the Turkmen side in those meetings. So are you sensing the same thing as Dr. Luka mentioned, that Meredov might be taking the back seat here and Hajiev emerging as a potential person probably replaced Meredov in some time in the future?
I don't share the same sense. I think that within the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Turkmenistan, they have clear separation of power, and Vepa Hajiev is the one who has to deal with the dirty things, quote-unquote, yeah, at this Human Dimension Implementation meeting of the OSCE last year, for instance. He was the one to speak. For Meredov, I think it's a bit, this task is a bit lower, you know, beyond his powers. I mean, it's a bit low for him to go to the OSCE and speak there on behalf of Turkmenistan. So Vepa Hajiev does it. In fact, recently, I think about a few months ago, Berdimuhamedov announced that there will be a new deputy foreign minister in Turkmenistan who would be dealing solely with the issues of interaction with international organizations. And for that, I think, if I remember correctly, the ambassador of Turkmenistan in Kyrgyzstan was nominated. Ever since, I have not heard of any of his activities. If he stepped in, but I'm sure he stepped in, but there was no visible activity from his side.
Okay.
And my feeling is that Meredov still remains in this position is because he's one of the educated ones among the Turkmen officials, and losing him would make Berdimuhamedov a bit weak on the international arena, because Meredov is a diplomat. He can negotiate. He's welcomed outside of Turkmenistan. He shakes hands. He talks, and he's open. And recently, I was actually reading about him on WikiLeaks. I don't know if it's a good source, but I mean, it's diplomacy, yeah? And it comes from the American diplomats in Turkmenistan. And his profile was widely discussed by the Americans when they interact with their local channels and sources. And they share the same views. They say he is one of the most educated officials in Turkmenistan, who is familiar with international laws. He's a lawyer, by the way. So Berdimuhamedov will definitely keep him. And as Dr. Luka, I think you said that he's not trying to profile himself higher than what and who he is, basically. He's Yes. In the shadow, indeed. He's not as bright and interesting personality as Sheikh Muradov or Batyr Berdiyev. And I think it's his own, it could be his own personality that, you know, some people are very active and very initiative, but some are, some prefer to be in the shadow. So he's just one of them. And maybe it's a nice political move and nice political strategy to be like that and to act like that and to behave like that in order to stay in your position for as long as it allows.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Can I just add something to this? Because it seems to me that we're getting onto a agreed point that we have a number of elites who are doing what, you know, you say is the dirty work. And you got Hajiev, you got the Ashgabat mayor, and also you got, in the energy sector, you got this Yakshigeldi Kakayev, who's the guy who's running Tapi. And he is the one that there has been a complete overhaul of the ministry in the last 6 months. And I think that Bruce wrote extensively about it. But this Kakayev, who's got some deputy ministership, I think, or prime ministership, is actually still in charge. So he didn't really suffer anything, which probably shows that the regime acknowledged the fact that there are some particular areas that, for one reason or the other, has to enjoy more stability, more durability. So you got these two tiers, or the touchable and the untouchables, those who are actually untouchable because they are very strong or because they actually do serve some purposes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Lokai. Let's take a short break here. When we come back, we will continue to discuss why this is happening and is it really helping. Welcome back, gentlemen, to the Majlis. Now, in the first half of the discussion, we have been talking about dismissals. Let's debate here about the logic behind these dismissals, whether it is working, and a little bit talk about the timing of that. Debating the subject with me are Dr. Lokan Cheschi, chairperson of Central Asian Studies Center at the University of Glasgow, Ruslan Matiyev, director of Turkmenistan Alternative News, Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlak Awazi, Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I'm Mohammed Tahir, director of the Turkmen Service. Bruce, by any account, these dismissals are unprecedented in Turkmenistan, and why it is happening now?
In some cases, I think there was some justification for some of the dismissals. Berdi Mukhmedov was just in Dashauz, but he had dismissed a bunch of officials from that same place at the start of the year. Gorogli district chief was one of the people that was sacked right after the New Year. And that was because there was a breakdown in law and order on New Year's Eve in his area. It's exactly the kind of thing the Turkmen government fears and does not want to be reported or repeat itself anywhere else, where there locals actually attacked the police. So there was a local, it was absolutely a local dispute. But it was an incident that required calling in special police to restore order and to temporary detention of a few dozen people at the time. So that's one that you could say anyway was probably justified. In the case of the trade and economic ministry, they uncovered corruption, or at least that's what Berdi Mukhmedov said. And we know that, in fact, there's a lot of corruption in Turkmenistan. You could probably make these charges against most officials at any time. But for whatever reason, that was the one that Berdi Mukhmedov singled out. And at least according to him, a lot of officials in that ministry were involved in some kind of corruption. And so they were the ones that got sacked there. Now, when you look at the number of, like, you know, Akims, district Akims that he's fired, that really is a mystery. You know, I mean, we see the reasons that he sacked some of these people. In the recent visit to Dashauz, I believe some of them were anyway dismissed because they hadn't removed satellite dishes from the region, you know, or at least along the route that Berdi Mukhmedov was traveling on. But it was basically, you know, it's always for failure to fulfill some kind of basic orders that they received from the president. But you know, again, if you look at the sheer number of them that get sacked, then you got to figure, as I said earlier, that either the tasks they're being given are simply beyond them, their ability to perform, or, you know, this is just part of some, in a way, a kind of a terror campaign to just keep people in order. And
that's exactly, Bruce. I was listening to that audio. Some of them were accused in not providing proper communication services to the villages or districts they supervise, or some of them were accused of not having a proper highways. I mean, that is something, it sounds like, beyond their authority or beyond their capability to provide those services. And then it shows, like, again, the same question, what you asked, Bruce. So what the president is trying to achieve here?
Yeah, that's, and if you want to go, and of course I have no proof of this, but if you want to go into the little bit darker aspect of what this might be, this could just be, officials probably have to pay a little bit of money to somebody to keep their posts, and this might just be like a big shakedown or something, where some of the lower level officials who are keeping their posts were able to come up with some money to pay off their sponsor, benefactor, whoever in the upper levels of government, and the ones that are getting sacked just couldn't come across with the right amount of funding. So
also, if I may add just one point on this to follow on from Bruce, this is a highly paranoid regime. So when you have 7 or 8 dismissals at Belayat level or even at a trap, you have to think that someone must have said to the center, there might be a problem here and there. So sort of decreasing loyalties are actually punished pretty quickly. There is a lot to do with corruption, but I think there is also a lot to do with paranoia as well.
There is another thing developing at the same time, is like the economic difficulties in the countries. I mean, recently we have seen Berdimuhamedov scrapping or downsizing the services which used to be free at some point. And some companies are not able to pay salaries of their employees on time. And even there was a discussion lately that switching into paid education system in the country. I mean, is there any connection between these economic difficulties and these dismissals, Dr. Luca?
I don't think so. I think that we've seen this happening even in the yards of time where the gas prices were higher. So probably the acceleration of this has to do with the fact that the country is in a deep economic crisis, but I think that it's more of a political problem for me. And, what Bruce was saying before is very interesting about the reasons why these people are sacked. They are not sacked because of their shortcomings. They are sacked because the government needs that kind of rotation. What would be very interesting to see, and this, unfortunately, we can't have much of a proof because, again, the official press stopped publishing the biographies of the elected one, is whether those elite who are sacked reemerge at some point later on. That would be very interesting to check, showing that there is a sort of possibility of rehabilitation at lower level, of course. But I don't think, I think that what we're seeing with very high turnover and extremely small average tenure in ministerial posts actually has to do with dynamics internal to the authoritarianism. Maybe the crisis accelerated that, but my point is that probably it would have happened anyway in 5 or 10 years' time.
Mm-hmm. Ruslan, do the officials who are sacked, is there any possibility for them to come back at some point, or is there any examples that they have done so in the past?
I know a few cases. For example, well, this is not yet confirmed, but I'm waiting for some confirmation for this. The person that we mentioned already in today's talk, the former chief of president, basically his number one bodyguard, Gülçeldi Hocaberdiyev, I have unconfirmed information that he is now serving as one of the deputies of the state migration service. As I said, I'm trying to get some more confirmation or more credible confirmation, so to say. But this could be one of the examples.
Right. Bruce, we were trying to understand that there is no logic, common logic at least, difficult to understand. But any sign that it is working for whatever purpose that president might have in on the agenda?
As far as improving conditions in the country, I don't see any sign that that's true at all. As far as instilling a sense of fear, publicized or public loyalty to the leader, I suppose, it probably is working. But, especially during these hard economic times, I think this is just one of the worst policies you could imagine. Whether they're qualified or not, whether they're competent or not, there is something to be said for people who have actually been doing the job for a few months or a couple years, which doesn't happen very often, that not a couple years in Turkmenistan's case, but at least someone who's familiar with the work is likely to succeed at whatever goal you give them a little bit more than someone who's just new to the job. And I don't see how, given in their current economic state, that they're going to be able to pull out of it by just firing people and depending upon the fact that the next guy will be so terrified that he'll work 24 hours a day the whole year around just to, you know, improve stuff and keep his job, when in fact it doesn't seem like it is possible to accomplish many of these goals. So,
and making other people to work 24 hours.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, you would think that to some extent this has to be adding to the unpopularity of the regime. I've got to believe that you're putting all this pressure on people, and it really, this is probably the biggest trickle-down effect from the government has, is this, you know, by forcing the pressure, the feeling that you have to produce, the feeling that, you know, you could be sacked, thrown in jail, something like that. You know, that's probably the most effective trickle down process in Turkmenistan today.
Ruslan, what impact it's having on the ground for ordinary people? I mean, all these unprecedented wave of dismissals. Like, if we talk in the example of one district, for example, from the province that you belong to, Dashoghuz.
Well, we have a saying in Russian. It says a new broom sweeps in its new way, if you know what I mean. A new person who came to head a district, basically what he does, he reshuffles his own office. He gets a new assistant, he gets new key personnel within that district, within that etrap, for instance. You know, it can be as low as you know, changing a school director or a factory chief, whatever, you name it. Of course, there is impact for the locals. You don't know how this person will step in, how, what his policies will be, and as some of you mentioned today already, that corruption is a big issue in Turkmenistan. These reshuffles, these changes in local administrations mean that, you know, they open room for another wave of corruption, basically.
Dr. Luka, in your opinion, where is this reshuffles is leading the country?
Nowhere. This is the interesting stuff of all of this, that we've seen that the reasons why they have been appointed is not because they are more competent than their predecessor, and the success is not assessed in relation to what they actually do, because otherwise, as Bruce was saying, average tenure would be longer, because you had to give people time. Also because there is no resources, so you have an elite which has got no resources, as Ulan said, no expertise. You also got no time to conduct your duties. So what is going to go? Nowhere. The thing is that this kind of gubernatorial and ministerial appointment are only participating in the preservation of an authoritarian regime. So the stability that we've seen there, it doesn't happen at ministerial level, it doesn't happen at the Velayat level, but it does happen at regime level. Even though we have all of these dismissals, reshuffles, elite turnover happening, the regime is still stable because Medimonov is uncontested. So it is a bit of a convoluted way to ensure that your power is stable, but it seems to me that while on the one hand there is no benefit to policy making, to crisis management, there is a lot of benefit to the authoritarian stability of the elite with through these dismissals. And that's really paradoxical, but also very Turkmenistan, if you want.
Right, right. With this note, Dr. Luka Ancheci, Chairperson of Central Asian Studies Center at University of Glasgow, we unfortunately have to wrap up our discussion. Thank you for your insightful thoughts. And also big thanks goes to Ruslan Matiev, Director of the Turkmenistan Alternative News, and Bruce Panier, Editor of Kishlak Awazi at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Thank you, gentlemen, for being part of the Majlis today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
That's it from me, Mohammed Tahir, Director of the Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Bye-bye.